Well, this morning we are officially crossing over the halfway point of this series as we dive into part three of a four-part series that we have been calling Hope in the Dark. If you're anything like me, if you've been a part of any week of this series, what you know is that this series has been challenging us to rethink the way that we look at the dark moments of our lives. And if you're anything like me, you know that this series has been absolutely rocking your world. But if you're here for the very first time at Core Online, or maybe you're just here for the very first time during this series, I mean, we want you to know just how incredibly excited we are that you have chosen to join us. And we're capable of acknowledging that you're sitting there right now wondering where we've been throughout this series and wondering how you get up to speed so that today can be an incredible day for you. This entire series revolves around this one uncomfortable reality. And that is this, that on this earth, life will have trouble, that trouble will be there, that despair will be there, that hurt will be there, that darkness will be there in our life. Whether we like to admit it, whether we like to look at it or not, when we all get honest enough, we can admit that truth. That every single one of us in our past have walked through moments of hurt. That every single one of us have experienced moments of despair. That every single one of us have struggled with doubts and fears and these seasons of darkness time and time again. And because that is a reality for every single one of us, that in this life trouble will come. We have experienced it in our past, and undoubtedly we will experience it again, time and time again, in our future. We are faced with this one daunting question. How do I get through the seasons of hurt and darkness? Or maybe for some of us, the question is more appropriately rephrased in this way. How do I get through the future moments of hurt and darkness better than the ways I got through the past moments of hurt and darkness? Because if we were all being honest, when I look into my own past hurts, what I can recognize is this, is that I haven't always done it in a healthy way. Is that I haven't always ventured through those moments of darkness in the best possible way to come out the other side better than what I went into that valley season. And maybe for many of us, the reason we find ourselves not journeying through the darkness in the healthiest way possible is because of the tension that we acknowledged in week one. You see, we acknowledge this tension that for so many of us, we have been taught that great relationships are all about embracing. You simply embrace at every turn and you act like everything is great. And you may even have to fake it till you make it just to act like everything is good between you and that person. But for any of us who have experienced a great marriage or a great friendship with our best friend over the years, what we know is that every great relationship must go beyond embracing, right? Is that every great relationship, while it entails a certain amount of embracing, must also reach a point where we are willing to wrestle with honest, difficult questions. Where we are able to ask each other those difficult questions and handle the answers that are given back to us. And if we can acknowledge that that is true of every great relationship we have here on this earth, why are we incapable of acknowledging that that same thing is true in our relationship with God? That a great relationship with God, yes, has an element of embracing, but it also allows us to wrestle with honest questions that we have with God. It also allows us to wrestle with honest doubts and fears and insecurities. See, all along the way, when we find ourselves realizing that a great relationship can both embrace a genuine faith in God and wrestle with honest questions, it allows us to uncover this truth, that true intimacy with God isn't found on the mountaintops. True intimacy with God is found when we experience His faithfulness in the valleys. But to do that, we don't quit on Him. We don't fake it till we make it. We don't act like everything is always peachy and everything is always all right. We wrestle. And then last week, we continued in this series by talking about this reality that once we have asked the honest questions, once we have wrestled with our doubts, then we find ourselves in this season of waiting. And oftentimes, the season of waiting is even more difficult than the season of wrestling, right? But we find ourselves waiting for answers, waiting on God to move, waiting on God to do something to fix our circumstances. And we hold firm to this truth, that God's delays are not God's denials. And his faithfulness is not dependent upon my wants in my timing. His faithfulness is dependent upon his perfect plan and his perfect timing, and he has never failed at that once. But to experience his best, sometimes we must wait in the seasons of darkness. To experience his best, sometimes we must go through seasons that feel like we are going through hell to finally reach his best on the other side. But yet, here we find ourselves still stuck in the middle. Here we find ourselves with still things in our lives and our circumstances not being fixed. Nothing feels better, but there is good news. The story isn't over. The story isn't over in your life. The story isn't over in my life. And the story certainly wasn't over in Habakkuk's season of darkness. You see, throughout this series, we've been following along the story of this man named Habakkuk. And Habakkuk was a prophet that we find sort of buried in the last half of the Old Testament. What we know about Habakkuk is that he only gets 3 short chapters attributed to his story. But in those 3 short chapters, it becomes very apparent very quickly that Habakkuk and his people, the Israelites, are journeying through this season that, frankly, you and I have found ourselves journeying through a time or 2 or 100 in our lives. They are journeying through this season of deep despair. They're journeying through this season of darkness, wondering how God is going to come through for them, wondering when God is going to deliver them, wondering when God is going to answer their questions and step forward and finally fix all of the brokenness they are experiencing. You see, Habakkuk is journeying through this season of confusion and doubt, this season of darkness. And in that season, we see Habakkuk wrestle with honest questions with God. Then we see him wait on the answers from God. But in light of that, he still finds himself stuck. Chapter 1 doesn't bring him out of the darkness. Chapter 2 doesn't move him through the valley any quicker. And so how does Habakkuk respond in light of that? In light of approaching chapter 3 of his story, coming towards the end of his story, and nothing is fixed yet. This morning we dive into chapter 3 of the story of Habakkuk. If you haven't done so already, this is a perfect opportunity for you to grab your weekly that maybe we mailed to you, to crack that open and pull out the notes page. You can follow along with us as we move through the story of Habakkuk, even fill in some blanks as we go. If you don't have one of those, you can click on the icon below the message on our website or in the Facebook Premiere post to bring up the notes page right there on your screen. But here is how Habakkuk responds as he is still in the middle of this waiting, where nothing has been fixed. He is still in the middle of the darkness. In Habakkuk chapter 3, starting in verse 1, it says this: "This prayer was sung by the prophet Habakkuk." Now we read that, and what we see happening here is Habakkuk immediately begins to sing. Now, when I think about that word sing, for every single one of us, it has a little bit different definition. A different picture comes to mind of what's taking place here. For me, this is like I sing in such a way that it's just quite not loud enough for anyone around me to hear me. For some of us, singing is like the under the breath thing, where we want to move our lips, but we don't really want any noise to come out of our mouth. It's that thing we do during church where we cross our arms and we just wait for it to be over. It's the thing that we only really do out loud when we're in the shower. Every single one of us have a different definition of what singing is. But here we find Habakkuk in the middle of his waiting, engaging in this moment of worship. And what we know about this is so absolutely incredible. When we break down the text and when we look at that word in this translation, it says sung. When we look at that word and we go back to the Hebrew, this word is most likely literally translated as the word shiganoth, creative word. And this word shiganoth begins to reveal something incredible about what is actually taking place with Habakkuk. The practice that he is actually engaging in this moment. You see, when we look at the Hebrew translation of this word shiganoth, what we get revealed to us is this, and I helped you out in your notes. This is the actual definition of that word that we see as sung in the text that we read. It says this, it means a musical direction for a congregation to sing with wild, passionate singing and rapid changes of rhythm, high-spirited praise, and vigorous enthusiasm. Here, you can just imagine with me, Habakkuk isn't just singing a hymn a little bit under his breath. Habakkuk engages in this exuberant worship. He's singing at the top of his lungs. There's probably a little bit of dancing going on. Depending upon what you believe, he might have had some flags or some ribbons. I don't know. But here, Habakkuk is engaging in worship that is high energy. But what's so fascinating about this is we read that and we think, okay, he's going crazy in worship. He's singing out loud. But what's so fascinating is this. We see Habakkuk engaging in this exuberant worship before God came through for him. Do you realize that? When Habakkuk is going through this shiganoth, nothing has been fixed in his story. God's hand hasn't moved in some miraculous way. Habakkuk's circumstances and the circumstances of the Jewish people have not been fixed. They have not been made right to this point. And what we see, this is so incredible, you got to catch this. What we see from this story is Habakkuk begin to reveal something that we often overlook in our own lives right here, right now in 2020. And that is this. Sometimes the most authentic, passionate praise is the praise that happens before the provision. Why is that? Why is it that oftentimes we can find ourselves engaging in praise for our Heavenly Father in a more passionate way before the provision is provided? It's because of this. When the provision is provided, all we worship is the what. But before the provision is provided, all we have to worship is the who. We are simply worshiping who God is, not what has been provided. And in that moment of darkness, before the provision has come, in this exuberant worship, we see Habakkuk start out his worship in this way, by exclaiming this at the top of his lungs. In verse 2, it continues, I have heard all about you, Lord. I am filled with awe by your amazing works. In this time of deep need, help us again as you did in years gone by. And in your anger, remember your mercy. You see, if you've been around CORE for any amount of time, there's this song that we have sung over and over around here called Do It Again. And in this song, there's these incredible couple lines that say this. God, I've seen you move. You've moved the mountains. And I believe I'll see you do it again. You made a way where there was no way, and I believe I'll see you do it again. See, in this moment, Habakkuk is diving into that thought from that song. God, I've seen you move in the past, and I believe that you're going to move in that same way in the future. I'm clinging to that. I'm hopeful of that. And he really poses this question for you and for I. What do we do when what we see with our eyes contradicts what we believe in our hearts? What do you do when what you see with your eyes happening around you contradicts what you believe in your heart? What do you do when you feel stuck in the darkness and yet you know it was never God's intention for you to stay in the darkness? You see, that's the question we are all faced with a time or two in our lives. It's a question that Habakkuk found himself wrestling with, wondering how in the world, in the middle of this darkness, in the middle of this valley, am I going to turn the corner? Am I going to be able to upswing in this and be able to experience God's best and be able to experience something different, something better in my lives? And what he chooses to do is this, is that in the middle of life's deepest valley, Habakkuk begins to realize that in order to turn the corner and begin to swing upwards, the first thing I must do is remember. You see, we see him lay it out perfectly in verse 3. He says this, I see God moving across the deserts from Edom, the Holy One coming from Mount Paran. His brilliant splendor fills the heavens, and the earth is filled with his praise. Now, at face value, when we read that, the question that comes to mind most likely is this. Is Habakkuk having some sort of a vision, some sort of a dream here of God marching across the valley? It's not that at all. You see, what Habakkuk is doing here is he's acknowledging something that while we sit here thousands of years later after this was written, it carries very little significance to us in 2020. At the time that Habakkuk wrote this, every single Jewish person knew exactly what Habakkuk was talking about. Habakkuk wasn't having a vision or a dream. Habakkuk was remembering the faithfulness of God in the past of the people of Israel. And he was doing it in this way. Those two places that he mentions at the beginning of that text carried great significance to the Israelites because of this. These were the first two places of refuge that God brought the people of Israel when they were released from captivity from Egypt. When they were released from slavery, these were the first two places out of Egypt that God brought them to safety. And Habakkuk is going back and he's remembering, I remember what you did when you brought my people after hundreds of years trapped in captivity to Edom and then to Mount Paran, that you have been good, that you have been faithful, that you delivered us from this hurt once before. And I believe, and I'm choosing to remember this because I believe that even in the hard times, that you did it once and you can do it again. But what we see Habakkuk do next is this. He realizes, man, I can't just stop at the what. I'm remembering what God has done and how he has been faithful in circumstances before, but I can't just stop at the what in remembering. I also have to transition to the who. And I also have to remind myself of who you are, God. He continues this way in verse 4. His coming is as brilliant as the sunrise. Rays of light flash from his hands. Where his awesome power is hidden, pestilence marches before him. Plague follows close behind. When he stops, the earth shakes. When he looks, the nations tremble. He shatters the everlasting mountains and levels the eternal hills. He is the eternal one. In this moment, Habakkuk is saying, man, I choose, God, to remember your goodness. And I know you don't feel good now. But when I look back, what I can acknowledge is this. In the middle of the Israelites' bondage in Egypt, in the middle of their slavery, you didn't feel good then. But now looking back on it, we can see your hand move. And we didn't see it in the moment. We didn't know what you were up to. It didn't feel fair. There was a whole lot of uncertainty. But now after the fact, we can see what you were doing in all of it. And we can see how your hand was moving. And we can trust that you delivered us in that. And for some of us, we find ourselves in that exact same boat. That when we look back, man, we didn't understand that God was good in the middle of the hurt. It took us 5 months, it took us 5 years for us to finally see and realize that God was moving in all of that and that God was good and that his goodness was going to come through for us. I didn't see it then, but I see it now. A week ago, Krista and I were driving in the car to a wedding of some good friends of ours. And as we were driving in the car, just the two of us, our kids at Mama's house. It's an incredible opportunity for us to finally have adult conversation. And as we were sitting there driving in the car, we began to talk about a family that's very close to us, that finds themselves in the middle of a situation that we have journeyed through for far too long, finds themselves in the middle of a struggle to have kids on their own, and they've started the steps of the adoption process, and they met roadblock after roadblock in that, and they're experiencing frustration, they're experiencing hurt, they're experiencing uncertainty. And I listened to my wife just talk through this and talk through the hurt that she's experiencing with them. And then there was this moment in the story where things shifted. And she began to talk about the dark moments of her life, the dark moments of our story. And as she began to talk about that, she began to say this. She said, "Ben, I can't really explain it, but I find myself in this season of life that as I enter into these valleys, as I enter into these seasons of darkness, there's this incredible trust that washes over me. There's this incredible confidence in the goodness of God that I know that He's going to come through. And the only reason that I have that trust, the only reason that I have that confidence that He is going to come through is because I have gone through valley season after valley season after valley season." And she said, "I'm a person that struggles with trust. And yet there's something incredible that's happening inside of me as I've seen the hand of God move in valley season after valley season. And it's impacted the present darkness that we're walking through." My wife would tell you, on every long trip that we go on, she attests to when we take vacations to the beach, it's like 11 hours of silence because I just don't talk in the car. I don't talk a whole lot, period. In that moment, there wasn't a whole lot of talking. There wasn't a response that I could give back to her. It was because in that moment, as I heard my wife talk about her remembrance of God's goodness and her attachment to God's faithfulness in the present darknesses and the future darknesses, only because of how He's come through in the past dark moments of her life, there was all this emotion that was swelling up in me. This emotion of just being proud of the maturity of my wife, and of recognizing how she leads me by example so often, and how her perspective and her maturity oftentimes far exceeds my own. And it was this reminder for me, man, am I willing to follow my wife's lead? And to look back and remember God's faithfulness. Because you want some brutal honesty about my life, my story, my present circumstances. And some of y'all are like, "No, please, Ben, we get that far too often. Too bad. It's my church. I'm going to do what I want." See, here we find ourselves in the middle of a season where questions and uncertainty find themselves closing in. And so many people in this season, as we find ourselves in week 3 of relaunching in-person services, are like, "Man, isn't it so great to be back at in-person services?" And there's like these two sides that are battling inside of me. And I want you to hear the first one loud and clear. Man, it has been so incredible to be back together, to worship with people. That has been good. But there's also this other side where there's this struggle, where you walk into this room and what you recognize is that God has moved us so incredibly in our past, and yet here we find ourselves back in a place where we're like 65% of the people are walking into this building that were before all of this hit with the pandemic. And it's the struggle of how unfair this is, and through no fault of our own, through no bad choices, we now find ourselves in the middle of a rebuilding phase. And it's like, "God, I've already done all this. I've done all the hard work. I've put in all the blood, sweat, and the tears. I've trusted You. I've laid it at Your feet. I've followed Your will. I've followed Your direction. And now here we find ourselves sliding backwards. What's up with that?" And yet what I failed to do in the midst of all of this is stop and remember that in the last 5.5 years, God has done some absolutely amazing things in this place. And it is no big thing for Him to do it again. It takes nothing for him and his hand of favor to move us through this season to something bigger and better. To look back on how God has moved us and be able to stand on the fact that I believe because of the goodness of God, the best is yet to come in this place. But it only happens if I remember. If I choose, then in the middle of this darkness, in the middle of your darkness, we are not enduring. Enduring is a passive stance. Enduring is like I curl up in a ball and I wait for the storm to pass. Man, I don't want to endure. I want to embrace. I want to be present. I want to grab on to every moment of the dark season and get to experience how this dark season provides another chapter to the only God story of my life. To the only God story of your life. To the only God story of this place. You see, oftentimes what we miss is that the darkness provides the greatest examples of who God really is. We choose to remember. And then we choose to change what we're looking at. Habakkuk says this in verse 16. I trembled inside when I heard this. My lips quivered with fear. My legs gave way beneath me, and I shook in terror. I will wait quietly for the coming days when disaster will strike the people who invade us. And then this is where it gets good, because this is where it's like, I could choose to look at all of these things. And he starts in, even though the fig trees have no blossoms, and there are no grapes on the vines, even though the olive crop fails, and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the fields and the cattle barns are empty. Here he's like, everything is going wrong. Everything is broken around me. Everything is dark. Everything's confusing. Everything isn't going as planned. And I could choose to look at all of those things and focus my attention to that. Yet, I will rejoice in the Lord. I will choose to focus my attention on you. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. I could look at all this hurt, I could look at all of this brokenness, or I could fix my eyes to the one who has provided salvation for my eternity, who has fixed everything for my eternity that needs to be fixed. I know everything I want isn't coming to fruition right now, but everything I need has already been handled by a God who is so incredibly good. And I know this is hard, because if you're anything like me, when life hurts, that's the easiest thing to focus on, right? Like our eyes just immediately want to dart to all of the things that are unfair and cling to all of the things that are uncertain. But what if we changed what we were looking at? What if we changed what we were holding on to? Earlier this year, at the beginning of 2020, in our house, we went through this season of about 6 weeks where between our two sons, they just kept passing sickness back and forth. And Krista and I got to this point where it's like, we're going to the doctor again. We're going to rapid response again. We're going to the ER at Akron Children's Hospital again. When are we going to get past this? I am so done with this. And we battled with the flu, and we battled with colds, and we battled with cough. We battled with two bouts of pink eye. And in that, our youngest got it both times. The first time he got pink eye, we went to the doctor and he had all this crud going on and he was crying because his eyes were itching. And then when they itch, they hurt. And they gave us syrup. And he absolutely loved this. Like they have that little medicine syringe. And every single night we would get that out and we'd put the medicine in there and we'd put it in his mouth. We didn't even have to press on the syringe. He would just suck all the medicine out of the syringe. And it was so easy. And the second time it rolled around, we took him in and they did all of their lab work and they came back of like, there's some differences here. And so we want to give him something a little bit stronger this time around. And so we're going to do eye drops. If you've ever given eye drops to a two-year-old, it is not a fun process. Every single night, in the 10 days that we had to give our son the eye drops, Krista and I dreaded it. It was a two-person fiasco. Like one of us had to get the eye drops ready and the other one of us had to be the restrainer. It's like every single night I had to get on top of him and hold him down and hold his forehead down so that we could get the drops in his eyes. And every single night when we went about this process, the flailing and the kicking and the crying began to happen. And in my son's eyes, it was like he was looking back at me asking this question. Daddy, why do I have to go through the pain? Why are you making me go through this? And as my son held on to me, questioning the dark moments, the only thing that I could offer back to him was this. I know you don't understand, but I do. I know you don't understand why you have to go through this little bit of pain. But if you will embrace me and my truth, if you will trust me and cling to me, what you'll realize is this, is that this little bit of pain will spare you from a whole lot more pain later. If you just trust me, if you just keep going, if you don't turn back, if you don't quit, if you just wrestle and wait and then look to me. You see, Habakkuk holds on and he looks directly into the character and the goodness of his God, even when his circumstances prove that that just isn't logical. And here's the crazy part. As he's holding on, we've brought you all the way through this story, and now we find ourselves at the end, and this is what the end of the story looks like. In verse 19, this is the final verse. It says this, "The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes me as sure-footed as a deer, able to tread upon the heights." There is no fix that's written about Habakkuk's dark season. But what we gather is this. Coming out of the darkness isn't always about a fix to our circumstances. God doesn't always change our circumstances. And turning the corner in the valley isn't always about receiving better circumstances. Coming out of the valley is oftentimes about new perspective. Coming out of the valley and into the upswing is oftentimes about new intimacy with our Heavenly Father. That even when we're in the valley, things change. When we stop looking at the scenario around us and we start looking at the God above us. You see, I look back at my life and what I can recognize is that I enjoy God on the mountaintops. Man, I enjoy God on the mountaintops. But where I really get to know God is in the valleys. See, in week one, I made this quote that true intimacy isn't found on the mountaintops. That true intimacy with God is found as we experience his faithfulness in the valley. And you're saying, Ben, that's a really catchy one-liner, but you're going to have to help me connect the dots. It sounds good, but I'm not sure how I can believe that in my life. You see, the reason that that is true is this, is because on the mountaintops, what we choose to acknowledge and thank God for is the what. For what have you done for me? And hear me out, there's nothing wrong with thanking God for the what. But if our relationship is only based on what have you done for me lately, there will always be something lacking in our relationship. But in the moments where we find ourselves in the valley and we muster up the strength through all of it to still be able to praise him, to still be able to enter into worship, to still be able to acknowledge his goodness, what we find is that all I have left to praise is the who. All I have left to cling to is who you are and what I believe about your goodness. You see, sometimes we find ourselves on the mountaintops and we get to praise, we get to sing, we get to worship because we feel it. But sometimes we find ourselves in the valley, and the choice that we must make is this, is that sometimes I praise until I feel it. You see, what if hope wasn't about our circumstances, but hope was really about what we're holding on to in the midst of our circumstances? What if hope in the dark was about choosing to see the goodness of God even when things aren't good? Would you pray with me? Father, today, so many of us find ourselves and the darkness of life. We find ourselves wondering how it's going to get fixed and how our circumstances are going to get better. God, what if we clung to this hope? That oftentimes coming out of the valley isn't about our circumstances getting fixed. Our circumstances on this earth will never get completely fixed. We live in a broken world. But what if coming out of the valley was about a change in perspective? It was about a change in intimacy? It was about our ability to cling to your goodness even when things aren't good? That hope can be found in the dark, even when we're still in the middle of the dark. That we believe with everything inside of us that you are good. That we're going to choose to remember your goodness and the way in which it showed up time and time again in our past. And then we are going to choose in the midst of the hurt and the pain, when the eye drops are being poured into our eyes and it hurts right now, that God, I am trusting you and I'm clinging to you, know what's best, and I'm going to change what I'm looking at. I'm going to stop looking at the scenarios around me and start looking at the God above me. And when we do that, we know that that is when we get to experience a hope in the dark. We thank you for that. We thank you for your goodness. It's in your name that I pray.